the apartheid wall?
The apartheid wall is in many areas an 8-meter high wall, which Israel has been building for the past 2 years. It, like I said, is surrounding these villages and turning them into ghettos, into camps that you cannot get into or out of. It is strangling the economy. It is strangling all aspects of livelihood and stealing farmland, and in the process demolishing homes and demolishing greenhouses. So Israel claims that the apartheid wall is for
greenhouses.
Yes, where the Israeli army has destroyed farms and farmland and olive trees and citrus trees. In the process, they have to destroy the greenhouses, which have been, you know, this land has been, you know, their ancestral land for centuries, their grandfather's land that they are now farming, as it has been passed on to them and has now has been stolen from them. But the apartheid wall, Israel claims, is for security reasons, to, as they say, keep out suicide bombers. If you logically would think, if you're going to build a wall to keep someone out, you would put it along your border, and you would put it in a straight line or something that goes along with what your borders are supposed to be. But it's obvious to anyone who has two eyeballs that this has nothing to do with security reasons, because the apartheid wall, in some places it's a large fence which is outlined with razor wire and security towers and electrical posts. So this wall juts through the West Bank, steals underground aquifers, which is the only water resources that the Palestinians have. It's the only thing that they can get their water from, both for their homes and for their farms, in order to grow their produce. So it steals arable land and puts it onto the Israeli side. It turns some villages, like Qalqilya, into its own separate territory, whereas in some places the wall only goes around one side. In Qalqilya, it completely surrounds it so that you cannot get in or out. So it's obvious that it isn't for security reasons. When they're stealing water resources, they're stealing land, they're imprisoning thousands and thousands of people with this wall. And it is also jutting far into the West Bank in order to scoop up the illegal Jewish settlements. So, for instance, the settlement of Ariel, named after Ariel Sharon, Prime Minister of Israel, is the biggest settlement in the West Bank. So there is now, even though President Bush says that he condemns Israel for building the apartheid wall, and that for every dollar that Israel spends on building this wall, they will take a dollar away from their foreign aid, which is bullcrap. But the apartheid wall is now in construction to surround Ariel, which in the process is going to steal hundreds and hundreds more acres from Palestinian farmland. So living inside Qalqilya for most of my time there, it was very obvious to me that it has nothing to do with security reasons. And this apartheid wall is also being built on the Jordanian side of Palestine, which is to the east of the West Bank. If it were for security reasons, if it were to keep Palestinians out of Israel, then why would anyone in their right mind build this apartheid wall on the Jordanian side? So it's bullcrap. It's to basically ethnically cleanse the land of all Palestinians, to make life so unbearable that they have no choice but to leave. But as it has been presented, as it has been shown to me during my stay, is that they're not leaving, that they had been running since 1948. And it's just, there's no point in running anymore. There's no point in hiding, that this is their land and that they're going to fight for it. And that they're just going to keep their hopes up and look, and they're going to look for a peaceful solution. And, that's the apartheid wall.
So if you were, could you explain to us, have things gotten worse in the last few years? Have things escalated? Is that why so many people are going over there to check out what's going on?
I wouldn't say that it has gotten worse. It definitely has gotten worse in terms of suicide attacks and retaliation from the Israeli government and extrajudicial killings and blind killings, as I've heard it called, because they'll shoot from helicopters into heavily populated areas when they're targeting a suspected militant from a certain wing of a terrorist organization. I think that it has gotten more, I think people have become more aware of the conflict. The first intifada right now, and the intifada is an Arabic word for uprising. It means that the Palestinians are rising up against the brutal regime of the Israeli government. So there was actually a first intifada, which started in 1987, which didn't get anywhere near as many people that had died in the process, not as many martyrs, not as many suicide bombings and things like that. But in September of 2000, when Ariel Sharon visited the Temple Mount, which was off limits to the Palestinians at the time, he visited the Temple Mount with his entourage of soldiers, and as the Muslims who were praying nearby basically came to see what was going on, the soldiers opened fire on the Muslims, killing a few of them, which started the current intifada. Many skeptics say that Arafat started the intifada, wanting more violence to go on, that he did this to basically, I don't know, use terrorist means or something against the Israeli government. So right now we are entering the third year of the current intifada, and many, many things have happened since that started, both in terms of many people dying on the Israeli and the Palestinian sides, and as far as awareness in many, many different people's minds. So I think that has a lot to do with people deciding that they want to go to the Middle East to see exactly what is going on in this conflict. And a lot of people know that what their media is telling them, because it is so pro-Israeli, that it's not correct. So, for instance, for myself, I wanted to go to get a personal account to actually see what is happening behind the U.S. lies, behind the media's distortions. And it was confirmed for me within a week who's in the right and who's in the wrong.
Again, it's so hard to visualize what's going on over there. It's so hard to visualize the actual geography of the situation. Most of us are upset if we have to wait in line for a long time in Kinko's, and many who are active now within a few years will go on to their brilliant careers and forget about those who are suffering throughout the world. And so, has it made, I mean, there are so many people traveling to Palestine, to the Mideast, and you would think that out of a sense of shuttle diplomacy, out of a sense of knowing the whole world is watching, you would think that, that things would slow down, but it seems even with all the traveling that's going on, that that and all the visiting that's going on from the international community, that that has not slowed down the destruction and oppression. So do you think that those visiting has helped?
I definitely think that that it helped, no doubt. If you would go on to the ISM website, which is PALSolidarity.org, the whole website is just filled with personal accounts from demonstrations, layered with photos and stories from each individual area, from each region of the West Bank and Gaza. I met people from all over the world who, you know, hold this conflict, although they may neither be Jewish nor Muslim nor Christian nor anything, just a, you know, a peace-loving person. These people that do this work back home, that have taken back so much, so many pictures and stories and just personal accounts of what is going on. For myself, I brought back hundreds of pictures and tens and dozens of stories of Palestinians who had been going through this for so long and just want a peaceful conclusion. They're just ready. They're willing to forgive. Probably 99.9% of the people I talked to are willing to take the 22% of the land. But in doing that, you know, it's going to require a lot of concessions from the Israeli side too. That's taking into consideration the settlements. That's taking into consideration Palestinian political prisoners, in which there's thousands of them. The refugee situation. People need to return to their homeland, and that's one of the things that Israel is not willing to accept just yet. And it's not really talked about in the current plans in determining a solution, which is the roadmap that Bush has proposed. But I know for a fact that these people there have brought back to their individual countries so much that hasn't been there before. And I feel like if the ISM wasn't there, hasn't been established, that people hadn't gone with an organization like this. I mean, there are other organizations. The CPT, which is Christian Peacemaker Teams, is a small organization, but sends some of their delegates to the area.
Is there a Palestine IMC?
There is a Palestine IMC.
Did you meet them?
I didn't meet them. There's an Israeli IMC as well. Who I did meet, which I was very, very happy to do so, were Israeli peace activists. I met some who are part of a group called Tayush. I met Israeli peace activists with Gush Shalom, and also several rabbis with Rabbis for Peace. And I stayed with a few of these Israeli peace activists towards the end of my stay, discussed the situation with them, the politics surrounding the whole situation, the history behind it. And it's just amazing and really important to hear an Israeli side of this who can speak out against their own government even when they are shunned and scrutinized by their own family members and neighbors and called self-hating Jews and things like that. So it was really awesome to hear their views on this whole conflict, and to know that even though they're living in this war-torn country as well, that they have hope that can work with the Palestinians and try to find a peaceful solution and again live together once again like they did for hundreds of years. So it definitely gave me hope that there will be a peaceful conclusion, as does it give hope to the Palestinians.
Now, you have taken a lot of photographs of your trip. Where can we find those online?
I'm working on uploading my photos to a website. I have quite a few on there now. You can go on to community.webshots.com/user/Palestine exist. That's PalestineExist.
That's one word.
One word. So I'm still working on that, but you can definitely check those out. You can also, like I said, check out the ISM website, which has hundreds and hundreds of photos from all over the region, Gaza and West Bank and Jerusalem and the like.
Do you have a photo show coming up here in Pittsburgh?
I am working on a PowerPoint presentation, which most likely my first presentation is going to be at Carnegie Mellon University within the next 2 weeks. I don't have the exact date or the room yet, but I have gotten word that I can do that. And also in Shadyside in Pittsburgh at the Friends Meeting House, shortly after CMU, will probably have my next presentation there.
Now, in your PowerPoint presentation, is that going to be projected onto a screen?
Yes, I'll project the many photos that I took. Do a little photo journal type of presentation explaining what I had seen, the different demonstrations and actions that we held along with the specific photos from those regions.
Do you think that we could sneak out of CMU with that projector with the That sounds like a nice toy, I'll tell you. So you plug the computer into it, the PowerPoint thing goes on to a screen like a slide presentation if we had a slide projector. That's nifty.
I know some people.
Okay.
We can work on that.
Again, is that the main thing that you did? Did you do any interviewing? Did you do any writing? It was mainly photographs. Did you do any video?
I did not do video, but I did quite a few other things than just take pictures. Because there were only a small number of ISM internationals in Qalqilya, I kind of became a co-coordinator in Qalqilya region, which involved lots of meetings with the local Palestinian population, especially the mayor and the prisoners club, which we had a demonstration in Qalqilya against the apartheid wall, which 2 weeks before my arrival, they had another demonstration in Qalqilya where they painted a 5 meter by 5 meter, so about 15 feet by 15 feet banner, which said no apartheid wall, free Palestine, something or other. And
where did you put the banner?
The banner at that point was actually attached to two extremely large helium balloons. And they lifted the helium balloons into the air as a symbolic gesture as escaping the wall. So the banner hovered above the apartheid wall. There were actually Israeli peace activists on the opposite side, on the Israeli side of the wall, who were protesting in solidarity with the Palestinians and the ISM people. So that happened along with graffitiing the apartheid wall with slogans like Free Palestine, Welcome to Concentration Camp Qalqilya, Self-Determination, and things like that. So that was 2 weeks before I got there. The demonstration that I was involved with in planning and participating in was pretty intense. We there were three goals of this demonstration. All three were accomplished. The first one was we had bought 30 white doves that were given to the some Palestinian children in Qalqilya.
These are live doves?
Yes, live doves. White doves as a symbol of freedom and hope and justice. We had the Qalqilian children release the white doves when we reached the apartheid wall. The second thing we did was we painted although the apartheid wall was already painted from the last demonstration, because the apartheid wall is so large, we had extension rollers so that we could reach the top. And there were four of us, two from Catalonia, they were from Catalonia, and there was another one from Denmark and myself. We rushed up to the apartheid wall just as the Israeli occupation forces were arriving onto the scene, and we used our extension rollers and painted the Palestinian flags atop the graffiti that was already there. And like I said, because the apartheid wall is so large, we couldn't even reach the top with our 3-meter extension sticks. So we finished three or four really large painted Palestinian flags onto the apartheid wall. The third thing that we did was there are something like 270 prisoners from the Qalqilya region that are in Israeli prisons for political reasons. So we made Palestinian flags out of construction paper and wrote the names of a couple hundred, probably about 100 prisoners' names, and had written them onto the Palestinian flags and tossed them over the apartheid wall to the Israeli side, where we also, at this demonstration, had Israeli peace activists waiting, protesting in solidarity. So that was another symbolic gesture of escaping the apartheid wall and freedom and hope. So, yeah, I was involved with a lot of the demonstrating for a lot of the planning for that. There was quite a few demonstrations that I took part in. The group that I ended up with in the ISM, we called ourselves the Floating Squadron. We basically hopped from demonstration to demonstration, which you basically took part every other day. Do you want me to get into all the other demonstrations? There's a few.
Is this like, were demonstrations happening every day or once a week?
Demonstrations were happening as often as they could. When I arrived, demonstrations happened about every other day for 2 weeks. And then after that is when there was a suicide bombing in Jerusalem, which hindered a lot of our plans because the army at that point was on edge and were willing to basically shoot at whatever they saw that was moving. If you got anywhere close to the apartheid wall, they'd shoot at you. They'd probably shoot you if you were a Palestinian. Because we were internationals, we had kind of an upper hand, which is why it was so which was so respected by the Palestinians that we were there, because it's been proven that internationals prevent the Israeli army, from using excessive force, whether it's tear gas or rubber bullets or sound grenades. So, yeah.
So the demonstrations were aimed at who and saw by who?
The demonstrations were aimed, they were pretty much media events. They were used to attract the attention of the media, which we received quite a bit of media attention from many different outlets. We had, in almost every demonstration, had the Associated Press and Reuters available. We also had individual stations from Italy. The Italian media were there at quite a few of the demonstrations. Media outlets from Denmark I met, from Spain there was quite a few. So it was aimed at the international population, basically, to show that you know, the Palestinians are rising up against this insane machine that has been oppressing them for so long, and to get into their television sets or their newspapers this huge mass of concrete that is separating these two peoples from each other. It's a racist separation barrier, far worse than South Africa, far worse than the Berlin Wall. So to get this into people's minds, this visual aspect of what is happening by the Israeli government, who claims to be the only democracy in the Middle East, who don't even give equal rights to their Arab Israeli citizens, call themselves a democracy, but showing to the world exactly what is happening with the apartheid wall and the erroneous killings of the indigenous people. It was aimed to show people all over the world what is happening. So we did a lot of organizing and a lot of interviewing of local Palestinians. I did a lot of interviewing of people in surrounding villages near Qalqilya and Jayus. Jayus is also a village that is completely surrounded by the separation fence. It has four entrances and exits, which two of them are only open at random times. The fence is preventing many people from getting to their farmland. 80% of the people in Jayus, for example, are farmers and cannot get to their land anymore. So I did a lot of interviewing of mayors and farmers and ordinary townspeople to see what they had to say about the wall. And it's completely unbelievable what it does, and just that it's there, and to see how it rips through the landscape so far away from the 1967 Green Line borders, and just seeing the illegal settlements right over the hill. It's obvious why the walls and the fences are there. So a lot of the interviewing that I did was for what the Palestinians call their olive harvest. The olive trees and the olive has been a symbol of Palestinian livelihood for generations. That's a good majority of what the Palestinians do is olive harvesting. The problem that the apartheid wall presents to olive harvesting is that because of the illegal Jewish settlements, because of what they call Jews-only bypass roads, which are roads connecting from settlement to settlement to Israeli cities like Tel Aviv or West Jerusalem or Haifa, some of these olive groves are within the vicinity of the settlements and these bypass roads and checkpoints. And when the farmers go to harvest their olives, they come under fire from the settlers, who shoot to kill, basically. There's been many reported cases in several different villages of Palestinian farmers being shot by the settlers and even getting arrested by the Israeli soldiers when they're on their own land harvesting their own crops. So what right now, actually, in the beginning of October is when the olive harvesting starts. And it has started, a week and a half or a week ago, and goes far into November, towards the end of November. What the ISM does with, and what I did in interviewing a lot of these farmers and mayors, was to see exactly how much help and what help they needed for the olive harvest, which is a very, very important time for the Palestinians. This is when they get most of their income for the year, is from harvesting these olives that they had been growing for so long. So the ISM gathers this information and figures out how many internationals, how many Israeli peace groups they'll need in each individual area to at least attempt to prevent any kind of attacks from settlers or soldiers. What they do is take one village at a time, see their demands and their needs, and tries to spread out as many volunteers as they have in order to prevent these attacks. So I left just as... They're called settlers because it's what the settlements are colonies. They're colonizing powers that have stolen the land from the Palestinians, especially in the West Bank. I mean, there are settlements in Gaza as well. They're called settlers because they're settling on the land which isn't theirs. They're settling into the West Bank and Gaza, which if a Palestinian state ever were to be viable, then it's not likely that that's going to happen when you have these huge, huge settlements on their land, which a lot of them have stolen, like I said, the wall has stolen underground aquifers and wells and redirects this water to the settlements, which have beautiful, beautiful green grass, and they have fountains flowing. And I didn't see one settlement that wasn't on top of a hill that is basically overlooking all the Palestinian ghettos, basically to say, haha, we're better than you. We can steal your water. Our sewage tanks can drip down into your farmland, as they do in many, many of the settlements. It's completely atrocious looking at these settlements and seeing not even 100 meters away a Palestinian people, a Palestinian home or village that don't even have safe drinking water to give to their families and to their kids, while these settlements have stolen so much of their land and their water.